This is Packer and Durham on ACCN and Sirius XM Channel 371.
By the way, real quickly, Marshall Goldberg, when we talked about in hour one.
Yes. I was getting ready to ask, do you think Andrea has an opinion on Marshall Goldberg being railroaded in the 30s on the Heisman?
I already gave you the scoop. He got screwed in the vote. But this guy said, Adam Bell said, Pat Goldberg has his number tied by the Cardinals in the NFL, was also a Navy SEAL in World War II. Now, anybody's a Navy SEAL?
Deserve the Heisman Trophy?
Without question.
Right.
Come on now.
There you go.
We got Army-Navy this week. I'm excited about that.
Yeah, you
are. Excited about our next guest.
Andrea Adelson has had a very light and easy weekend. The last 96 hours have been pure bliss for the old AA. Welcome. Good morning. So, why don't we start with what's the latest?
Well, the latest is that we're awaiting decisions on four key positions in the ACC. I think at Virginia, we can start there, at head coach, with Anthony Poindexter seeming to have the lead there to succeed Bronco Mendenhall. At Duke, I know Tony Elliott has emerged as a favorite, but they continue to do interviews, maybe talking to some option coaches as a possible successor for what David Cutcliffe has done. And then I think the two bigger ones that are on folks' mind this morning, what is Dan Radakovich going to do? Is he going to leave Clemson for Miami as athletic director? And then there's a meeting this morning in Louisville at 9 a.m. To determine Vince Tyree and what's going to happen with him in Louisville, ultimately moving on to Florida State as the athletic director. So, yeah, not a lot going on. You mentioned the Mario Cristobal news conference as well at 10 o'clock. So all of that made this quite a fascinating weekend in between conference championship games and bowl selection and playoff selection. So, yeah, you're right. Not a lot going on.
Andrew, what would you rather do? Have stuff to talk about and do, or just sit on the couch eating Cheez-Its? I mean, come on. I mean, you love them both. I get that. But, man, alive, it has been rocking in the league and really nationwide. It has been as volatile 10 days that I can think of in college athletics, and we've all been doing this a long, long time. This has been absolutely insanity the last 10 days.
Probably longer than that. At least it feels like that. 10 days have felt like 100 days. It almost feels like last season when we were slogging through COVID. That's what this coaching carousel has felt like. And every day, it has seemed, has brought more surprising news than the next. And so I think that's what's kept everybody on their toes. The theme, at least for me, has been expect the unexpected. Did any of us think that Bronco Mendenhall was going to step down when he stepped down? Did any of us think even a month ago that Miami was going to be able to pull off getting Mario Cristobal and bring him back home? Did any of us think that Dan Radakovich would leave Clemson for Miami? And that's just in the ACC. We can sit here and expand out the scope to the rest of the nation with a lot of the other surprising moves, Brian Kelly, Lincoln Riley, so on and so forth. So beyond the fact that the carousel started spinning earlier and there's more money in the system now than there ever has been before, has been, to me, the wholesale surprise in the moves that we have seen over the last 10 days to month of the season.
Andrea, I want to ask you about Miami in this respect, because Mark and I were just sitting here kicking around the $20-plus million that was all involved in this transaction of the last 12 hours, 24 hours with Mario Cristobal and Manny Diaz. Did Miami just decide to go over and turn this faucet of cash on in the last 30 days, 45 days? I mean, have you got any sense of the timeline and the movement? And now we're hearing a report offline about a potential stadium being built in Coral Gables. I mean, all of a sudden, they've become the Bank of Miami, not the University of Miami.
Wes, for years and years and years, we had been told there's no money. I mean, Mark Richt had to shell out $1 million of his own dollars to get an indoor practice facility built. And it took how long to even get that done? They were the last Power 5 school in the state to even have an indoor. So now all of a sudden to see people coming out and saying, oh, we got money for this. There was two key turning points, I think. Number one, and anybody at Miami will tell you what Kirk Herbstreit said on College Game Day, changed the calculation. They were embarrassed. They were humiliated. The school president sat up and took notice. You know, it's one thing for us on this show to talk about where's the financial support for Miami? But it's another thing when you are put on blast nationally like that by one of the preeminent spokesmen of all of college football. And I think that's really what started things to get into motion for what can we do? What do we need to do to support this program? Miami Athletics had been told forever, you've got to sustain and support yourself. There's not going to be any institutional support. They see what's happening across the country, the amount of money that's been spent, people that are, what, decades ahead of them in that regard, and finally realized, okay, we got to do something. We got to do something to catch up. We've basically been irrelevant for the last 20 years. And about 13, 14 years ago, their former university president bought a hospital system. It's now called UHealth. Mm-hmm. That hospital system has turned a profit in recent years. And so they decided, okay, we've got some money. We can help athletics. And then when boosters and donors see, okay, the university is fully committed, now you got them saying, well, I want to support this. I want to be involved in this, right? There's been this wave suddenly at Miami where people want to be involved, where a couple of years ago, it was like pulling teeth to get anybody to donate to the university. So that's those to me are the key turning points, the money that they were able to get and what Kirk Herbstreit said got them to start change their way of thinking. But guys, I've got a column coming out at some point this morning for ESPN.com. For me, the money is actually the easy part. It's what comes next that's going to be the most challenging thing for Miami. Because when people think of Miami nationally, do they think about unity and alignment and one goal and purpose that everybody is behind? No. What do they think about? Negativity, toxicity, why can't we win? Why haven't we been relevant? Why isn't Miami back? Mm-hmm. So for me, if Dan Radakovich comes and takes the AD job for Mario Cristobal, they have got to get rid of what I think has been an atmosphere that has surrounded the program, that has seeped into it, of this negativity that nobody can figure out how to fix. They've got to tell people it's going to take time. You have to be patient. Because if people start coming out and complaining the second things start going wrong, that's not going to help anybody or anything in this situation. And that has been the hamster wheel that Miami has been on for the last 15 years.
Andrea, while everybody gets excited about Mario Cristobal, I'm going to go backwards a second. Manny Diaz is going to get paid handsomely not to be on the sideline at Miami. All that negativity you were talking about a second ago, I don't think anybody, regardless of who your employer is, would like to have been treated like Manny Diaz was here down the stretch. I mean, that was painful to watch from afar. Do you think Manny, what do you think his next step will be? Obviously, he's going to get paid a ton of cash, but he wants to coach. And I thought he and his staff did a really nice job in the second half of the season, keeping that thing together in Coral Gables. Where do you think he'll end up?
Well, I have been outspoken on social media since Friday about the way that Miami went about this whole situation and their treatment of Manny Diaz. And I know a lot of people aren't going to shed a lot of tears for someone who's banking millions of dollars. And also people have brought up the fact that what he did to Temple, you know, agreeing and then coming to Miami. To me, that's irrelevant about the way Miami handled this entire situation. If you're going to go out there and decide, well, we want a new coach, then get rid of the current coach that you have employed. It's that simple. You clearly feel he's not the person for the job. So say, thanks for everything, Manny. We're going to move on. And then begin negotiating with whomever you've targeted, in this case, Mario Cristobal. And so the way Miami handled this whole situation reflects poorly and negatively on Miami. And I think that it has been a public relations mess for them, even though ultimately they got whom they wanted. As for Manny, I think his statement said it all in terms of the way that he had been feeling this whole weekend. I agree with you, Pac, the way that Miami showed fight and heart and resiliency in the second half of the season when things weren't going great, when there was so much negativity around the program. That's something we have not seen previously out of Miami teams, that when things start going bad, they just pack it up and go in the tank. That's not what we saw in the second half of the year under Manny Diaz. And I think that's a credit to Manny, considering everything that was going around the program. I think he's a good coach. You saw the outpouring of support from his former players on social media who wished him well. If I'm Manny, I'm going to sit here and try to see what is available in terms of defensive coordinator jobs to try and regroup for a little bit. I'm not sure about the head coaching cycle. It's still spinning, so maybe there'll be an opportunity there. But I know that he wants to be a part of this coaching cycle. He wants to be able to put this behind him, move on, and start over somewhere else. I think he probably would have liked to have had a two-week head start had Miami made the decision that they ultimately made 2 weeks ago, which we all thought was going to be inevitable. But certainly, I don't think it's too late for him. He's been terrific as a coordinator. I think he's learned a lot from this entire Miami experience. So I do expect him to be somewhere coaching again next season.
You know, there are a few vacancies for DCs in the ACC as we speak. And the way we're becoming kind of intertwined with one another is interesting. You mentioned Dan Radakovich, and I don't want to get away from the other athletic director. In one of the more, and as interesting and as kind of weird as Miami has been, Louisville and Florida State with Vince Tyree seems to be just as awkward here, Andrea, because we do not know of any particular reason that the Louisville-Vince Tyree scenario has not been harmonious, I guess the best way to put it. But now all of a sudden we're talking about a guy who's the AD at Louisville and, in my mind, has done a tremendous job kind of getting them out from the clouds of what was there before, and now is getting ready to take Florida State? Is that what we're understanding here?
That's my understanding, is that Vince Tyree was targeted by Florida State. There were several other folks who interviewed for that job, but Vince Tyree is the one that stood out. Now, in terms of the Florida State situation, they've got a new university president right. that came in there who wants to put his mark on athletics and be the one to determine the direction that Florida State is going to move forward. It wasn't a surprise that David Coburn was stepping down. I think we all expected that once former president John Thrasher stepped down, that there would be a changing of the guard, so to speak, with the president and the AD. I think what's caught people a little bit off guard is that it is Vince Tyree who was targeted for the job. There were some of us, myself included, who thought that could be a position for their current Seminole Boosters president, Michael Alford, who came to Florida State after being at Central Michigan as an athletic director. Long history of involvement in athletics. I think he's done a terrific job at Seminole Boosters, just getting that whole situation organized for Florida State, but ultimately with a new university president who wants to be the one calling the shots and making the decisions. Vince Tyree is the one at the end of the process that I think they believe is somebody who can lead the program moving forward. And what probably stood out is the business background. And we have talked at length on this show about the financial difficulties that Florida State has had over the last 5 to 6 years. And so when you bring somebody in with that kind of business background who knows how to raise money, who's good at fundraising, that really is something that stands out because that ultimately has become one of the key components to the job of an athletics director. As for Louisville, you know, you're right. It's very awkward. And I cannot recall a situation when one sitting athletic director at a conference moves to go to a school within the conference. It might happen twice here over the next coming days. But according to some reports out of Louisville, there have been some disagreements with their university president. I know the fans have been disenchanted with the way football has been handled over the last couple of seasons, and they've targeted Vince for some of that. I know people are unhappy with basketball and some of the things that have happened there with Chris Mack and some of the suspensions and what's happened with the NCAA. So there has been some discontent there, but honestly, in terms of which one was a little bit more surprising, Radakovich Clemson, Tyree, Louisville, Florida State, I probably was a little bit more surprised to see Vince Tyree's name come up at Florida State, if I'm being honest.
Let's talk about a real positive. Kenny Pickett, somebody that you've talked about a bunch, gets the nomination last night to be a finalist for the Heisman. Man, well-deserved, a great championship weekend for Pitt and for Kenny Pickett. And it's really a great story, Andrew, isn't it, that a guy decided, hey, you know what, college life is good. I'm going to come back and finish this thing off and do it in style. Very cool for Kenny, great for Pitt, great for the ACC.
No question about that, and you cannot help but feel so happy for Kenny Pickett and Pitt, his coaches and his teammates, for getting to a trip to New York for the Heisman. And obviously, he's finished in the top four, or else he would not have gotten the invite to New York. And in an era of the transfer portal, and how many guys are in the portal right now? Thousands at this point in college football. To see someone make that decision to stick it out, to stay at Pitt, things weren't so rosy at the start of his career there. Mm-hmm. But he came back. He was committed to getting better, come back for another year. This is the reward. He's reaping the benefits of all of that. When you look at the numbers, you know, to be associated with names like Dan Marino and Deshaun Watson and Pitt school history and ACC history, the records that he shattered, 4,000 yards, 47 total touchdowns, and with the cherry on top, the character that he has shown throughout all of this. Just one of the nicest guys you'll ever want to meet. The giving back that he's done with his NIL, with the philanthropic purposes. You could not put together a better candidate to represent Pitt in New York this weekend. I'm happy for him, and I look forward to seeing who ends up winning it all. Whether he wins it or not, it's a tremendous honor for Kenny Pickett.
That's the thing about this, Andrea, and Mark mentioned this yesterday, and I concur. I think he's going to have some influence on some guys who are going to make some decisions, whether it's in the ACC or familiar names to us. We won't know until it happens and they tell us. But I do believe there are going to be players around the country that look at this and say, hey, wait a second. I mean, in Kenny's case, the conversation last January with Mark Whipple about holding a clipboard compared to coming back and taking live reps every week and you like to practice and this is what we can do, changed the course of his entire career. I mean, it's not even close. He'd be on somebody's practice squad, maybe on an active 53 right now, and now he's probably going to be a day one guy in the draft, maybe the number one quarterback taken in the draft.
There's no question that Kenny Pickett is the player who earned millions upon millions upon millions more dollars by making this decision to come back and play one more season. Now, it was a calculated risk. It always is when you make these decisions to come back. But the fact that he dedicated himself to being the best quarterback that he could be, the fact that he had teammates around him that allowed him to reach his goals, a coaching staff around him, he had the knowledge in place already. He knew exactly what it took to work hard to get there. NFL scouts will tell you that Kenny Pickett would be the poster child for everything that is right about coming back for one more year to improve your draft status. And he is going to reap the benefits of that. He might be the first quarterback taken in the draft. We'll see how all the evaluations start shaking out here in silly season, draft evaluation season coming up in January, February, and March. But there's no doubt that what Kenny Pickett did should be something that college coaches tell their players about when they try and convince them, hey, you might not be ready yet for the NFL. Let's give it one more year and see what you can do about improving yourself so that you can be the best player you can be and put yourself in a position to be drafted as high as you think you can go.
I saw an NFL mock draft yesterday on CBSSports.com that had three ACC players in the top 10. Kenny Pickett was going ninth to the Carolina Panthers.
Oh, Packer. PSLs for Packer, Andrea.
You know what? We've already kicked out the West Durham suite. Eric McClain's suite could be in trouble. If Pickett ends up here in Charlotte, he's got a place to stay until he figures his way around Queens Road and Queens Road West here in the Queen City. Just saying. Love to see him here in Charlotte.
Hey, as long as you've got the medicine cabinet fully stocked with the hair products so he can maintain the best hair that any of us have seen. And I don't know, it's a close competition with him and Trevor, but Kenny Pickett obviously should deserve that suite in Packer Manor, because if he comes to the Carolina Panthers, I know that you're going to be his biggest fan pack.
That would be true. And by the way, I have spent a grand total of 6 cents on hair product this year at the Packer house for my television being. So
there we go.
He's going to have to bring his own stuff. I got nothing for him in that department. Zero.
Hey, Andrea, thank you as always.
I can lend you some, Pack.
Great appreciate stuff. That. Good to see you. We will keep in touch. I got a feeling we may only be just beginning here a little bit. Andrea Adelson, again, the Miami article on ESPN.com coming out, talking about Mario Cristobal's arrival and the new attitude that needs to take place in South Florida. Thank you as always. Appreciate it. Be well.
Good to see you again, guys.
All right. that work at ESPN.com. When we come back, Mike Young coming up here in, what, minutes? 11 minutes away from the head basketball coach of the Hokies joining us. We have a chronicle of catches, Packer, pre-bowl we need to show folks. Trey Berry's hurdle.
Huh? Wide receiver U winners.
Yeah, we got all that. Coming up, best catch of the year. Before we get to the bowls, we'll take a look. It's Dontavian Wicks and others next.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. This is the Packer and Durham Podcast.
Packer and Durham.
All right.
On a Tuesday, show number 516. All right, we're going to narrow this thing down to a wide receiver year, the catch of the year.
Yeah, we're going to try and do this, and it'll be online at ACC Network on Twitter. We got to get this to four, okay? So here's what we're going to do. We're just going to take it chronologically and build it out for you. We'll show you the winner from yesterday. That'll be the 14th. We got to get it to four, and then we'll let the folks vote.
That's it.
Now, one caveat. Dontavian Wicks, Trey Turner, who both won three times.
That is correct.
Can they only be on once?
Hey, the catch is the catch, man. I don't care. If Wicks is on there three times, so be it. Turner's on there three times, so be it.
All right.
It's all about the catch.
So we're going to get it down to four. Let's go. Week one, Boston College and Colgate. And the FCS All-American, Trey Berry, got us started. The hurdle on Colgate. Right there.
Pass from Djokovic, who will be on the show next hour.
Phil Djokovic coming up 9:30. So there is Trey Berry, and that is a hurdle.
I don't think that's going to make it.
Nope, I don't either. Week two, Charlie Thomas. At the time, that was very good.
It's all about timing.
Yeah.
You know what? I don't think that's going to make it.
I don't think it's going to make it. Week three, Josh Downs of North Carolina. This has a chance.
Put it on the side.
Look, Quint Gwaltney, the senior associate athletic director at Carolina, signaling for the touchdown. By the way, we reviewed it. It was still a touchdown. You don't think it was a touchdown?
I said it then. I didn't think he was in. But it didn't matter. Okay. I don't care. Who cares?
Bicycle kick. Trey Turner. Week four against the Richmond Spiders. Yeah, this one's hot.
Got a chance.
That's hot. Kinalia.
Man.
It's good on Saturday, not on Sunday. Next, yes. Dontavian Wicks.
Yes.
Yep, this is on the list.
That's a top four right there.
Yep, sure is. This might be the best, one of the best catches in the country this year.
Seriously, that's gonna, you're gonna tell me that catch right there is gonna lose?
Oh, right. It's gonna win. That's gonna win, I think.
All right, we'll see.
Six, A.T. Perry in the corner. Trust me, he caught it. Here it is. It's a good one.
What a great year for the Deeks, man.
Yep. Week seven, Devin Carter. Come on, he backs in.
Yeah. And by the way, Devin Carter, if you remember, I thought he got hosed.
Yep.
Because I thought his catch against Clemson in the overtime for the win should have been on there.
And I agree.
Didn't he make the cut?
Yeah. All right, let's roll it back. Here's Dontavian Wicks against the Yellow Jackets. Yellow. Now, see, here's the problem with Wicks. That's really good, but is it better than Miami? And the answer is no, because Miami is a thing. My opinion. Next, Dontavian Wicks against BYU. That's almost a drop, and it's an ankle clutch, right?
Gosh.
Man,
seriously.
How many did he have?
Well, he had three.
I know.
I think two of them are worthy.
Okay. Let's go week 10. Avante Williams of Miami's interception. That's pretty good here.
That's a pretty good one, too.
Yeah. I mean, I kind of like Avante Williams, by the way. Committee, get ready. We're going to have a discussion.
Yeah, you're going to cut to four here now.
I know. It's hard. I've already got seven on here. Trey Turner, back-to-back wins. This is first quarter against Duke. Andy Bitter reporting Trey Turner turning pro yesterday.
That's exactly right.
Yeah. Along with several in the portal, apparently.
I was going to say, a tough day in the Commonwealth. Yeah. There was a lot of departures in the Commonwealth yesterday.
Here's the one that, yeah, now, that's the one. Now, Pack, seriously.
I've got four.
That's better than the bicycle kick, isn't it?
I got four.
All right. Okay. Week 13, Emeka Emezi for the win.
Yeah, every time I see this, I really wonder, how did North Carolina lose this game?
I know you do.
Hey, Mac, how do you lose that game?
All right. Our last entry from the title game. This is the one you were talking about.
Yeah, this is the one I was talking about yesterday.
Look at the laser. 2 feet, by the way. That's a Sunday catch.
All right, I'm going to give you my four, and then you do it whenever you want.
All right, committee, get ready.
My vote really doesn't matter. I'm just giving this as
suggestions.
Suggestions.
All right, which ones?
I like 2 weeks, BYU,
Miami. Okay.
I like Turner against Miami, and right. I like Downs against Virginia. Those are my four. That's all I'm going to say. Whatever y'all come up with, I'm good with.
Okay, first. All right, we're going to go Wicks, Miami, for sure.
I thought that was the best catch of the year.
We're going to go Emezi for the win because of where it was and when it was. Emezi against Carolina. We are going to go Turner, Miami. And the last one now becomes Downs or Avante Williams.
I told you.
Committee, Downs or Avante Williams?
I'm done.
Downs.
Now, the good news about those four is you got four different schools.
That's it.
So fans can have fun with
Dontavian Wicks, Josh Downs, Trey Turner, Emeka Emezi are the finals.
Yeah, for Turner and Wicks, who won three times this year, for
they
them
have
not to
be, on
to be
the
in
list.
The Final Four.
They have to be on the Final Four. That's part. Right, yeah. So there we go. That's the Final Four for wide receiver U. We will set it up. It'll be on Twitter. Pack and I'll push it out, too. You'll retweet it, of course, won't
of course.
You? Yes, very nice of you. When we come back, off to Blacksburg, the head basketball coach of Virginia Tech will join us. Mike Young's team, who hosts Cornell on ACC Network tomorrow night, will spend some time with us. How different is this year getting back to normal? We'll talk to Coach Young next on Packer and Durham.
Packer and Durham. Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
Packer and Durham on a Tuesday. Many thanks to Andrea Adelson, who joined us earlier.
Yep.
Right now, though, we head to Blacksburg, Virginia. Men's basketball coach Mike Young joins us right here on Packer and Durham on this beautiful Tuesday morning. Coach, first of all, always a pleasure having you on. Happy holidays. And, man, hard to believe we finally got to hoop season. We've got football on the brain. Next thing you know, these last couple of weeks, we've had some crazy games already in college basketball.
It's that time of year, Mark. You know, we've had our share of crazy ones, but good to be into basketball season, which should be another great ACC year for all of us.
Mike, it started last weekend. 14 of the 15 schools play. You end up playing Wake Forest. I hope you can hear me on this. If you had to chronicle that first experience with your team in the conference, how was it?
Wes, but would you repeat the first part of that? I'm sorry.
I know you opened with Wake Forest last week. What kind of experience was that for your team? I know you won the win. You didn't get that. But what did you learn about your team? What have you learned with your team through this early schedule?
Well, kind of spotty. Obviously, I learned that we've got a long way to go after Saturday's game against Wake Forest. Wake Forest is much improved, as I knew they would be. Coach Forbes is very, very good. We go back a long way, as you both know. Mm-hmm. We've had some good moments. You know, went to Navy. They were better than I expected them to be. They're good and one up there. you know, winning at Maryland. I think anytime you do that is a feather in your cap. Now you come back here to begin league play against, you know, Wake Forest, and they're off to a really nice start, 7-1, I think, coming into our game. And they fanned us, and we weren't very good, and they had a lot to do with that. We weren't as connected as we've been through the early portion of the schedule. You know, we practiced very well yesterday, needed to practice very well yesterday. And I've got a good team, fellas. We're going to be fine. Saturday's experience was humbling and eye-opening. We aren't as good as maybe some of us thought we were. And there is plenty of work to do.
Coach, I watched your games against Memphis and Xavier, which I thought were really good tests because those are good clubs. And you had a chance to win both, but you didn't. But I thought the toughness factor came into play with your game at Maryland. I thought down the stretch, I saw your team actually grow from the week before by being tested by Memphis and Xavier. And that certainly helped you, number one, in that environment and against a good
club. We did, Mark, and that was encouraging to see. You know, at Maryland, down 7, they had the ball twice in the second half, and we stiffened up. We're very good defensively going down the stretch. Hunter Couture was very good. I thought Keve Aluma in the second half was the Keve Aluma of old, and he carried that over into Saturday's game against Wake Forest. You know, wish we could have had, those are two great opportunities in Brooklyn to win. Didn't play very well against Memphis. We find ourselves up late under 4 and don't make enough plays going down the stretch. And the Xavier game kind of the same way. The Xavier game, we simply didn't play well enough to win. But I've seen some encouraging signs through our first 9. But again, as I said earlier, this team is still finding its way, and we have a lot of mountains to climb around here in Blacksburg.
I know you've got a kind of an interesting stretch here where it's Cornell and then a road trip to Dayton, Duke on a conference schedule on the road, Carolina on the road a week later. I mean, it's a pretty challenging little finish here to the 21 calendar before you even get into 22. What are the kind of punch list items for your team right now?
Just continue to get better, Wes. This Cornell game is, tricky. They're number one in the country in pace of play. I can't tell you how many games I've seen here over the last couple of days when an opponent makes a basket and they've got the ball up the floor and it's in the air in less than 3 seconds or 3 seconds. So that'll be a challenge. You know, Dayton struggled early. And has come back and has played very good basketball. I haven't seen very much of Dayton at all. Saw them in Florida. I think their exhibit tournament was in Florida when they beat Kansas and a very good Belmont team. St. Bonaventure, we all know how good they are. And then, into the throes of ACC play at Duke, at North Carolina. I don't know what I did to Brazo to deserve that. But that's what we have. And we'll go down there and, you know, we got a lot of improvements to make around here, and we're on our way. We're going to be fine when it matters most, and I look forward to those days.
Coach, I tell you what, I think that non-conference schedule only helps you. Mm-hmm. I do, and just like I mentioned with the Memphis and Xavier games, you know what? It's good to get tested. It's good to get your nose bloodied and get a sense of, okay, this is what it's all about. We're going to be ready to play. And you mentioned, you know, I watched the Dayton-Kansas game. That was an incredible game. And last-second shot bounces in. We know the Bonnies are really good. They've been ranked this year. They beat Clemson coming from way behind. You mentioned Cornell and what they bring to the table. Enough was said with Duke and Carolina. So there's nothing easy about December. I think that's only going to make you better in January and February.
Mark, I hope it plays out in our favor. That was by design. I have a good team, all right? I knew that coming into the season. I did not want to miss an opportunity in March, whatever might lie ahead for our team. I never wanted to miss something because, we didn't schedule properly. Now, did I schedule, was it too rugged? You know, time will tell. But we're certainly testing our team with this non-league play. Memphis, Dayton at Maryland, ACC Big Ten Challenge. Dayton's really good. St. Bonaventure's really good in a neutral game in Charlotte. So I hope you're right. I think you are. Time will tell.
All right. I want to ask you real quick here about Storm Murphy, because to me, Storm Murphy is going to be a story of your team. Obviously, he played for you at Wofford. He's transferred to Virginia Tech. But he's the kind of guy, if he's on your team, you love him. And if he's not on your team, you hate him. Is that a fair characterization of how good he can be? Storm Murphy.
Who's the player, Mark? Wes, I'm sorry.
Storm Murphy.
Stormer, you know, we go way back. And that kid had two really good years for me at Wofford. Wanted to come here for his, COVID year, whatever you call it. And is still trying to find his way. I think we all are, Wes, at this point in the season. There are a lot of teams that are trying to get, and that's going to be ongoing with the transfer portal and everything that that we're dealing with, and you're bringing new pieces in, trying to get those guys, all on the same page and mesh together. We're going to figure that out. He is the best kid in the world to coach. He's a very good basketball player, has not found his rhythm offensively. I've got to do a better job with that, but he will and we will, and I expect that that transformation to come about here pretty quickly.
Coach, I'm making a new list. We had your new football coach on the show last week after the press conference, and Brent Pry. And I just said, we need to learn a little bit more about you. And I asked him about his music preferences, and he said, you know what? I'm an Almonds Brother guy, man. You give me a little Midnight Rider as the walk-in music, that was perfect. So we know about your popcorn fetish, which is fantastic. But if you're going to have a little walk-in music to Packer and Durham, where are we going with you?
You guys, next time you're in Blacksburg for a game, come in the locker room, and it's just myself and our strength coach, and you will hear Pearl Jam's Corduroy. You'll probably hear a little Springsteen. You'll probably hear some Rolling Stones. That's prior to our team coming back in. But I tell you what, Coach Pry and the Almond Brothers, that band, still listen to that quite a bit as well.
By the way, have you had a touch base with him at all? I know you've been busy with your schedule. He's trying to put his staff together and recruiting and all that stuff, and everybody's going 1,000 different directions. But any interactions with Coach yet?
Yeah, a couple of times in his introductory press conference, and I saw him a little bit Saturday at our game. Hokie Nation's excited about Coach Pry. I'm excited about him, his family being in Blacksburg. He's going to do a whale of a job for us, and we're thrilled that that he's a part of our athletic department.
All right. Great to see you, my man. Always a pleasure. Appreciate the time.
Hey, I appreciate you guys. Wish you well. Enjoy your show. You guys do great work. Thanks a lot.
Thanks. You bet. Mike Young, head basketball coach at Virginia Tech. Hokie's going to be an interesting follow here. You're right about the non-conference schedule. He agrees. You hope you don't bite off more than you can chew, but you've played quality.
And for folks that have not been paying attention to college hoops because you're a football junkie or, hey, I'll get the hoops when it, let me tell you something. Dayton, St. Bonnie, those Memphis, really good club. Xavier, always traditionally good. You may say, oh, that doesn't sound very hard. Watch games. Just telling you, those are really great tests. I'm buying Virginia Tech. I think they're good. I think they're one of the top four or five teams in the league. What happened to them against Wake Forest stunned me. I didn't expect that at all. But you even told me last week that was a sneaky good game because the way the Deacs are playing.
Yep.
And Forbes has got all these new dudes. I don't, you got to fake left, go right with the Deacs a little bit because you don't know who they are yet. But I'm buying Virginia Tech. I really think they're a top four or five team in the league.
Yeah, I think it's going to be interesting to watch the remainder of the 21 calendar, because there is another little dip into conference play with this 20-game schedule. So you got the one dip last week, 14 of the 15 play. You're going to have one more probably next week and a half. Sidebar, a week from Saturday and Friday in Charlotte, there is a college basketball Friday-Saturday combination of games at Spectrum Center. Virginia Tech's there. Wake Forest is there. NC State's there from an ACC perspective. Very good field that they're playing in the Spectrum Center over 2 days. So folks might be interested in taking in a little live college basketball.
Make a road trip downtown.
Yeah,
and
see go downtown. What's going on. You can see a bunch of people. See Forbes, Keats, yeah. Mike Young, a bunch of other guys.
By the way, I was glad to hear a little corduroy from Pearl Jam there. That sparked my interest there. I wasn't expecting to hear that from Coach Young. Yeah. Nice. That was nice.
Thanks to Mike Young for the time. When we come back on the other side, tonight, 7 o'clock, right here on ACC Network, a look ahead at Jess Roy's three-day weekend to Clemson.
Oh, boy.
And
better get that right.
And we check in on our hoops accounting. All that and more coming up
Jess
next.
Jess Roy,
Packer and Durham
on
the Atlantic Coast Conference Television Network. Good morning.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. This is the Packer and Durham Podcast.
Clemson, South Carolina is a small town in the upstate, about as far west as you can go before you hit Georgia. And the closer I get, the more I can smell that hickory smoke.
I'm in barbecue country now.
We're a true barbecue joint. We start smoking the day before. Our meat is smoked low and slow, anywhere from 12 to 16 hours. We're not trying to be the biggest. We're not trying to be a chain. We're just here to give everybody good food and a good experience.
All right, here y'all go.
So what we got here, this is our pork brisket and rib combo plate. This samples a little bit of each of the meats. Right here, you've got your beef brisket. And we've got a glazed rib right here. So we take the ribs, we smoke them, and then we cut them up and we shallow fry them and then toss them in a signature glazed sauce.
They look so good.
That's gonna be your pulled pork right there. We pull it, it's smoked 14 to 16 hours, then we chop it up, serve it right to you right then and there.
Do you smoke everything in-house here?
We do.
With that hickory smoke that I'm smelling everywhere, it smells so good in here.
Yep, it's a blend of oak and hickory wood.
The meat is amazing. I can definitely taste the smoke in that pork. Tell me about the barbecue sauce.
So the barbecue sauce is my mother's recipe. So it's a secret. I can't tell you what's in it.
That sauce is unbelievable. It just perfectly balances the meat. I can still taste the natural smoke through the sauce. So the meat is excellent.
We actually don't put any sauce on our meat beforehand. We use the balsam butts and then we toss them in a special barbecue seasoning and then we put them on the smoker. Low and slow is the temperature.
Tell me about Clemson game day.
Game day is crazy. Up to 2 hour wait sometimes. When we have Clemson games, I definitely order double of the food. That's why we built the new courtyard area out there, just so we could give people stuff to do while they wait.
What happens when the barbecue runs out?
Unfortunately, when we run out, we're out. I can't just throw another steak on the grill.
Lucky for me, he's not out today. Have some good barbecue.
Good. We want people to have a good experience and to be wowed and say, I've got to go to that place next time I go into Clemson.
3-day weekend was here, leaving our mark on the smoking pigs.
All right, Jess Roy's 3-day weekend. Tonight, Esso Club, The Exchange, Smoking Pig, all the haunts, 7 o'clock Eastern Time, right here on ACC Network, streaming live on the ESPN app. The long-awaited and anticipated trip to Tiger Town.
Good start. Smoking pig. That's a must. If you're making a road trip
I've
to Tiger
Esso,
Town.
I've heard Esso Club.
I've been there a few times.
Apparently.
Made my mark in that joint.
Exchange for ice cream.
Multiple times. Good spot. The list is long. We watching that tonight.
Yeah.
Give you a full report tomorrow.
Oh, boy.
Jess Roy.
All right.
I will say, Smoking Pig
is
if you're going down there for a football game, basketball game, baseball, whatever.
Right.
Doesn't matter. If you're going there, I tell you what, the Smoking Pig may be the perfect place to go like May 13th for for the ACC Rowing Championships.
Are you thinking that, like, we have some sort of Packer and Durham commune there at the Pig?
You think?
Yeah.
You think that's a possibility?
I think we could.
No, wait. You think we will?
Yes. Oh, yeah. There you Absolutely.
Go. That's a better
idea. Yeah, I think unauthorized Packer and Durham commune at the Pig.
It's a great spot.
It's open on Thursdays.
It's a great spot.
Right?
It'll be open.
Yeah. So there you go. You know it's open on Thursdays. That's regular business hours. Thursday.
Take that out on the boat. Do a show.
I don't know that it'll make the boat.
It'll make the boat.
All right. On the other side, Pack, I got your mistress is back.
Oh,
yeah.
Is she updated?
She is updated.
The net?
Seth Greenberg coming up at the 9 o'clock hour here.
Mm-hmm.
But the new net is out.
Let's see it. My basketball mistress.
Yeah,
the net.
I want you to look. This is the new net. This is just updated. Not a lot of change, but some change. Remember, it's exam week, not as many games. But nationally, can I tell you that 9 is Wyoming ahead of Duke?
Of course, because if your life depended on it and you had to pick Wyoming or Duke, yeah, you'd lean Wyoming, yeah. Of course, right?
Yeah.
Please.
I mean, Purdue, LSU, Arizona, Houston, Villanova, Baylor, top 6. Southern Cal, 7. Gonzaga, 8. Wyoming.
Sure. Sure.
The Cowboys playing at the Ott Arena in Laramie.
Yeah. Yeah. Like I think Wyoming's better than Duke.
Let me take you back to the glory days of the Big Monday.
Wyoming
the could late be... night snack from the WAC with Bob Carpenter and Jimmy Dykes.
Wyoming could be Duke calf roping, and that'd be about it. Maybe football.
All right.
But it's not in men's basketball.
Yeah.
Guarantee you that.
Yeah.
Promise.
There you go. How about a quick dive into our first edition of basketball accounting, hoop accounting, as we...
We're not that far off.
No. There's mine. 15 of them. Duke, Carolina, Wake, Louisville, Virginia Tech, top 5. Cavaliers, I think you're close. Syracuse, I just need a little more continuity. Same for Florida State. That back end group, I don't know, man. We got to find some. Got to find some ball players in there. Not necessarily specific players, just give me some wins and something to build with.
Isn't it interesting, Wes? So you like to say it's interesting all the time. Isn't it interesting that we go from football to our first basketball accounting,
yeah,
and Duke and Pitt have done a complete 180 here.
Mango.
Duke was at rock bottom in football all
yes,
year.
Sir.
Pitt ends up number 1 in football. We get the hoops, and it's a total you fake left, I go right.
That's it.
How about that?
Yeah.
Ours aren't far off. Of course, I'm going to give you a sweet 16. Duke 1, North Carolina 2, and then I kind of get skittish. I mean, I kind of feel like those two teams right now are playing better than everybody else. Louisville, Wake, Virginia Tech, I like all three of them. On certain weekends, they like them better than others. I still like Syracuse, even though they've been kind of goofy sometimes. Big one against Florida State on the road. Noles are trying to figure it out. NC State, I think, is a talented group. Virginia, I've got concerns about, and really the right-hand screen, I got concerns about all of you. All of you. Virginia, Georgia Tech, Miami, BC, Clemson, Notre Dame, Pitt. And my Sweet 16, in honor of what I had to watch nonstop over the weekend, the Dr. Pepper two-handed chess pass contest, which need to be eliminated ASAP.
What the guy, the official,
look at the
wearing
officials.
All the gear.
You know, he's looking down at his watch like, hey, you can't throw one over 31 seconds. How about somebody throw a football? What is this nonsense? Seriously. I mean, I'm glad for the students making 100K. That's awesome.
Yeah.
But look at the officials. Look how many striped shirts are in the scene here. Matt Schick.
We really need to talk to Matt Schick.
The greatest host ever of the two-handed pass.
We need to talk
contest.
To Matt Schick.
Matt Schick.
We need to get Schick on FaceTime to talk about how all that works out.
I mean, seriously. He is maybe the greatest broadcaster ever in the Dr. Pepper two-handed chess pass is Matt Schick. Nobody's better than Matt Schick.
I'm with you.
Nobody.
That's why we ought to have him on. All right.
When you think of Keith Jackson legendary calls, same thing with Matt Schick for the halftime Dr. Pepper two-handed chess pass. Matt Schick.
That's awesome.
It's great.
All right. When we come back, Chester Fuller, Packer, and I, we welcome our friend Seth Greenberg.
Finally.
Yeah.
First appearance in forever.
Power Hour starts in appropriate fashion, folks. Coach Greenberg joins us next. He will answer the question you've been asking. Who's behind Duke in the ACC?
Everybody. Oh, the answer.
We'll start with that next on Packer and Durham.
Packer and Durham.